right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday. Yeah, it's Friday, December 11th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everybody. We made it. I've been looking forward to this Friday for a while. I don't know. This one seemed to take a really long time to get here, but it is 56 degrees and cloudy here in upstate New York. We are supposed to have close to 60 this weekend. And I saw, I don't remember, maybe it was the Geminids. One of the big meteor showers is this weekend, and they said it may be spectacular. So if you got a clear sky and the weather is nice, it might be a good time to get out and check out what's going on in outer space. I don't know. I've seen a few meteor showers over the last 25 years or so that were quite incredible with big green tails. So I don't know. We might get lucky again someday. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show, AI Disobeys Self-Preservation, Google Verily, and IoT, which is the acronym for the Internet of Things. And if you remember, we looked at them now deciding that they need to program robots and artificial intelligence to be able to disobey rules that have been programmed into them for our own good. Yes, if a robot's going to walk straight and lift a box and it runs into an obstacle, their argument is the robot needs to be able to, oh, I don't know, it's early, what's the word? It needs to be able to adjust its programming itself without human intervention to be able to get around the box to make the straight line that it's been programmed to do. So I don't know your thoughts about that, but I seem to have real issues with artificial intelligence second guessing the rules that I gave it for existence and deciding that it's got a better solution than what I gave it. And of course, we can see that there are some major ethical problems with this in the future. Looks like that's happening. And, you know, I don't know if it's still up. I had a mega flash crash this morning, but I did have the story up that I was looking for about the newest UN killer robot summit that I thought was going to get postponed, but it looks like there may have been something last month that happened. So let's take a look at that first, and then we're going to continue on. We ended the show with the enchanted objects, the Internet of Things, and just looking at how Google and these biometric sensors are pretty much invading our lives right now. But here, let's get back. This is out of Amnesty International. I found, of course, there's a picture of a big killer robot. They have a campaign to stop killer robots is going on at the UN. And I mean, this is absolutely serious. This is a global thing that scientists have gotten behind. And in the very beginning, I thought it was a joke, but it's not, because people are just as concerned as I am. I hope you are too, as to what the future holds for our children. And I mean, I know it sounds like some Twilight Zone. We're going to kill all humans. But I mean, what they're talking about at the UN level, right, we've discussed DARPA ad nauseum, and DARPA is really where a lot of this technology begins. DARPA and MIT, the serpent's pit. And once they develop products in these places, the next place they typically go, at least for DARPA, is out to the battlefield for testing, because DARPA's development and their technology is all to make super soldiers. I mean, this is to win the battle with technology. So we have drones, you know, right now they have them, so they're flying and the guys are all sitting in some little room on another continent drone bombing people using a video game interface. But tomorrow it's going to be autonomous unmanned aerial vehicles that will be making a decision using biometric information and GPS coordinates or scraping cell phone tracking data. I mean, they have all these different ways to identify targets and locations. They got 230-point facial recognition software, heat signatures, you know, and they can arm these drones with all these different tools. to detect and destroy. That's the problem. Because once we get to that level where there is no human intervention involved at all, who's to say? And again, and add to that. So not only do we have this whole killer robot problem, but add to that now that these lunatics are talking about giving artificial intelligence the ability to question, and not only question, but say no and come up with their own programming. Hey, we got a huge problem here, Clyde. That's all I got to say. This is not going to turn out well for the human race in the future. Okay, I've seen this already. This has already played out 30 years ago in recurring dreams over and over and over again. I've told you guys about that. This is not going to turn out well. It needs to end. Stop. We don't need this technology. They don't need to be mobile. And I still didn't look up what happened to Jibo, but I want to find out what happened to that little obnoxious, snotty robot. All right, let's read about the campaign to kill robots. You know what? We might have to start a new campaign, but this is the campaign to stop killer robots. 10 reasons why it is time to get serious about banning killer robots. Out of Amnesty International, published November 12, 2015. So this is a couple weeks ago. Oh, actually, it's the 11th today. So a month ago. Governments are meeting today. So it was. They met in Geneva to discuss what to do about killer robots. Amnesty International is calling for the creation of a formal negotiation process with a view to establishing a new global ban on lethal and less lethal killer robots, both on the battlefield and in policing operations. And I'm going to say bravo because I didn't mention that. But yes, that's a lot of what is happening. DARPA develops, ends up on the battlefield, battlefield overstock. Ends up 1033 to your local police department. So you have MRAPs and Humvees here. How long is it going to be? And you know they already have drones with cameras. How long is it going to be before they have some of these autonomous units? So that is a very, very good point. Here are 10 reasons why such a ban on killer robots is essential. Number one, killer robots with quotations will not be a thing of science fiction for long. How many times have we said that? Nobody wanted to believe us. But guess what? It's here now. Killer robots are weapon systems which, once activated, can select, attack, kill, and injure human targets without a person in control. And once the stuff of dystopian science fiction, these weapons, also known as fully autonomous weapon systems, or AWS for short, will soon become fact. Many precursors to this technology already exist. The Vanguard Defense Industries Shadowhawk drone, for example, can be armed with a grenade launcher, a shotgun with a laser designator, or less lethal weapons such as a taser or a beanbag round launcher. And we've talked about those. And I thought not only do they have a taser, a rocket launcher, and a shotgun, but there was a pepper spray module for that as well. And some of the law enforcement already had their hands on that unit. In 2011, the office of the sheriff in Montgomery County, Texas, oh yes, here we go, purchased an unarmed Shadowhawk with a grant from the Department of Homeland Security. I remember I read about that. And then in this year in August, North Dakota became the first state, and I did a story on this on Antimedia, North Dakota became the first state to legalize the use of drones that can be used remotely to incapacitate people with high voltage electric shocks. Yes, they did. I will include my story that I wrote back in August in the notes of the show today about that high voltage taser drone. So good going, North Dakota. At least Montgomery County, Texas didn't buy any of the add-on modules. Their grant must not have covered grenade launchers and beanbag round launchers. Jeez. All right. Number two, another reason to ban killer robots. They will be openly used for repression by unaccountable governments. Now, we've said that also, you know, the day that we're running through the forest and we got these autonomous drones. And remember, you know, when you think of drone, you think of one of two things, the big military drone or the little Walmart drone. MIT, Robo Bees, and all the other freaky science they're working on there. I'm telling you, those little mini drones are coming, and they're going to be equipped with all kinds of things, and maybe they'll be the spotters to find you first. But think about it. You're hiding in the forest, and they got infrared. They got all kinds of, like, laser vision. They can see you anywhere. Heat sensing, IR. I said that, infrared. But, like, if you're in a tree, you got on camo, you're trying to hide from some insurgency. Whether, hey, I mean, maybe it's not even the government that's gone rogue. Maybe it's some lunatics. I mean, this stuff is available out there all over. This isn't like it's science fiction, like they said, at all anymore. And now we have overstock happening. And you can buy drones with cameras and crap all over them. I saw somebody modify in a YouTube video. They had modified a standard drone to carry a shotgun and shoot. I don't know how accurate it was, but, you know, there are tinkerers and engineers all over that are doing things in their garage. So I don't know. All I'm saying is the danger is there. Danger Will Robinson, runaway screaming, this is not good. We need to just stop this is what has to happen. Or we got to find a way with a pulse weapon of some kind to take these suckers out of the sky. Anyway, so number two, they will openly be used for repression by unaccountable governments. Some governments argue that killer robots could reduce the risks of deploying soldiers to the battlefield or police on dangerous law enforcement operations. Their use would therefore make it easier for governments to enter new armed conflicts and use force in, for example, policing of protests. Now, remember, they're already using camera drones in protests to get pictures of everybody's faces and identify them. There have been a lot of reports now, people getting pictures while they're at protests of drones flying above them. Those soldiers and police might be safer. This lowered threshold could lead to more conflict and use of force, consequently, and more risk to civilians. Proponents of killer robots also argue that their lack of emotion would eliminate negative human qualities as fear, vengeance, rage, and human error. However, human emotions can sometimes act as an important check on killing or injuring civilians. Yes, it's called that little bit of humanity that's left. And robots could easily be programmed to carry out indiscriminate and arbitrary attacks on humans, even on a mass scale, you think? Killer robots would be incapable of refusing orders. Now, I'm going to call no on that because we just read yesterday they're tinkering with that idea. Just in case you give it an order that the robot determines doesn't make sense or they came up with a better one. So I'm going to argue with that. So we're going to say not that killer robots are incapable of refusing orders. Killer robots may be able to refuse orders in the future if they come up with a better idea, which at times can save lives. Well, wrong. So we're not going to read any more of that. In 2011, the army refused to fire on protesters in Egypt, an action that required innate human compassion and respect for the rule of law. And yeah, you know, that's one thing. I mean, the emotional piece of this, the humanity, by electronicizing everything, and we're not just talking about drones, we're talking about our mobile devices and precision medicine and even, you know, remote healthcare. In precision medicine, of course, is being able to put all your stats and your DNA into a machine and have it spit out your personalized results for how to keep you healthy and safe. We read that yesterday. That's Google's new Verily. That's their new mission, is to be able to make you as easy to maintain as a car. But when we start looking at even the fact that my health insurance company is going to offer $5 consultations with a doctor, or instead of hanging out with friends anymore, teenagers don't run around outside or hang out or go and do things. No, they all sit in a room or in different rooms and text each other online. I mean, it's great with all this technology for people long distances apart to connect, but it's also affecting our physical, vocal relationships that we used to have with our friends, with our family, with our healthcare providers back in the days when we trusted them. Don't trust them anymore. With our police force back in the days when it was Officer Smiley in blue, not black. With riot gear on. You know, how long is it going to be before we have like remote controlled school buses driving our kids to school? I just saw they have remote, you know, the Google self-driving car. But back a few months ago, Pigmine had a video about these self-driving tractor trailers. Now, self-driving car is one thing. Self-driving tractor trailer. It was a German company, I believe. That's pretty insane. And I mean, yeah, we have tractor trailer drivers who sometimes drive more hours than they're supposed to by law, who have fall asleep at the wheel because it's a really hard, long driving job. So you could have someone in the truck and have it on autopilot for 12 hours and maybe be a lot safer. But think about the power behind that. And think about the fact that there is a machine making decisions as opposed to a human. And yesterday we also discussed the whole ethics behind allowing machines to override human programming and make their own decisions. And one of the big ethical dilemmas was whether or not, if in the case of some traumatic oncoming accidents where you have a brick wall or a semi tractor trailer pull out in front of you, if the self-driving car is going to decide to evade smashing into the brick wall or tractor trailer and save you at the expense of potentially hitting pedestrians that are off to the right or left or whichever way you turn, or is it going to determine that killing you is less of a loss than killing the people on the sidewalk because it made a right-hand turn? And I got to tell you, I brought that scenario up at dinner yesterday, and it mentioned what I had said, which is self-preservation. I mean, that's what we're going to lose here. We're all going to be on self-preservation when we're being chased by killer robots. That's pretty much all it's going to be. But in the event that we're in a self-driving car versus a human-driven car, if the human were heading toward the wall, the first response, without any ethical or moral judgment, the first instantaneous response before you hit that wall is to turn the wheel and to try to avoid it. And that to any living creature is going to try self-preservation in the last instant. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if there's a million people around that could be blown up. Most people are going to turn that wheel. I got chided at dinner yesterday for how selfish I was. And you know, in that study we had read, it was a large majority of the people that they had surveyed in that study about, you know, if they had an issue with self-driving cars killing them to save the people on the sidewalk. And the majority of them didn't. I was horrified by that. I was horrified that my family was horrified at me that I would turn the wheel and go into the crowd. Like I said, get out of the fucking way. I don't know. You know, we all got to take responsibility for ourselves. And that means 360 degree awareness at all times. And if you're not paying attention, wandering, and something comes careening toward you, you know, if you, I don't know. It got a little dicey at dinner over this question because I was like, seemed to be really horrible and selfish, and I don't see it that way. Yeah, I'm not out for hurting anybody. Like I said, I don't even hurt spiders most of the time. I carry them outside. Flies, little bugs, whatever. But if it's me or you, and I got one split second to make a decision, and it's either going to be that or I'm done forever, get out of the way. I would do the same for you. Okay, off on a tangent. Let's get to number three. So if you hate me now because of that, I'm sorry. But I think that 99% of us have put in that position where you have one split second, neither do or die. I think it's going to come down. Human nature, and not just human nature, living creatures all have self-preservation. Nothing is going to stand there and allow itself to be killed without trying to defend itself unless you've got an issue. Or you're inebriated, or something that's affecting your full faculties. But if you had your full faculties and you understood what was happening at that very instant, you know, it didn't come as a surprise where you didn't have a second to process it, there would be self-preservation. It's just ingrained in us as living beings. All right, and there's no moral or ethical anything. It's a biological process. Number three. They would not comply with human rights laws and international policing standards. Now, that's pretty interesting about killer robots, if you forgot what we were talking about. International policing standards prohibit the use of firearms except in defense against an imminent threat of death or serious injury, and force can only be used to the minimum extent necessary. Now, that's interesting considering that cops shoot to kill. Even when a kid pulls out a cell phone to use his camera, how many times have we seen that? And then the cop says, oh, my life is in danger. He doesn't shoot the kid in the hands to get the phone out of his hands or in the leg to make him fall down. No, he gets him right in the head or the heart, right where they teach you to aim. So I would have to say that, you know, I did a story too back on, it was last December. It's probably a year ago now. Darren Wilson. Was that who it was? Darren Wilson. I think that was the cop in Missouri. Where was that? Where Darren Wilson was. And the kid got shot. And though he'd been shoplifting or whatever, they had said, oh, my life was threatened. And the parents of the kid who got shot actually went to the UN. And they had filed a suit for human rights violations under the UN against the local police department. I did a story on that as well and had the whole document in the lawsuit. And, you know, now seeing these, I didn't realize that there were rules and I didn't realize that they are required to use the minimum force necessary. So where are all of those non-lethal weapons that we spent all kinds of money on back in like 2011 when Occupy Wall Street protests started, and we found out that years later, we found out that they had snipers up on top of those buildings, considering targeting people in the New York protests, but they didn't. Good thing. They just sent out the paddy wagon. But back in 2011, there was a lot of outcry about police brutality at some of those events. That kid got his head cracked open with the tear gas canister up in like Seattle or whatever, and there was all kinds of stuff, pepper spray in the face in California. But now it's just come down to any perpetrator, instead of using sound cannons or whatever, they just shoot them in the chest. It's unbelievable. And then say my life was in danger. I think, does that count for us? I'd wonder. I don't know. I'm not going to get off on another tangent. Okay. So international policing standards prohibit the use of firearms except in defense against an imminent threat of death or serious injury or force, and force can only be used to the minimum extent necessary. It is very difficult to imagine a machine substituting human judgment where there is an immediate and direct risk that a person is about to kill another person and then using an appropriate force to the minimum necessary to stop the attack. Yet such a judgment is critically important to any decision by an officer using a weapon. And in most situations, police are required by UN standards to use the first nonviolent means necessary. What? Such as persuasion, negotiation, and de-escalation before resorting to any form of force. Well, I would have to say that we have a little bit of a problem with that one. We might need our police departments to go back to remedial education on UN law. Effective policing is much more than just using force. It requires the uniquely human skills of empathy, which many don't have. That's one thing that all psychopaths lack, don't forget, is empathy. It requires the uniquely human skills of empathy and negation, and an ability to assess and respond to an often dynamic and unpredictable situations. These skills cannot be boiled down to mere algorithms. Ding! And they require assessments of an ever-evolving situation and of how best to lawfully protect the right to life. This is like the most jokiest sentence here. How to lawfully protect the right to life and physical integrity of people that machines are simply incapable of. Well, you know, Amnesty International, you can sit there all you want and tell us how police have been lawfully protecting the right to life and physical integrity of citizens here for the last, oh, at least 3 or 4 years that we've been watching this closely. And I'm going to say, not in this country, or at least a large number of our cities. I mean, the Department of Justice has just taken over now another police department and is investigating. How many is that now? There were a large number. This time it's Chicago. And they're calling for Rahm Emanuel to step down, by the way. Hey, maybe it's just in time. He can go be Hillary's sidekick and run as VP. Oh, what a nightmare ticket that would be. Okay. Decisions by law enforcement officers to use minimum force in specific situations require direct human judgment about the nature of the threat and meaningful control over any weapon. But put simply, such life and death decisions must never, ever be delegated to machines. Well, you know what's going to happen. And I'm going to say this. The fact that, I mean, this little bullshit paragraph from Amnesty International about how wonderful the cops are making sure they don't kill people, okay, is just a little pretty smiley face on a paragraph that's arguing for no killer robots. But I'm going to flip that argument. And I'm going to say, mark my words, that because of all this bloodshed and because of all the people killed in this country by trigger happy cops who shoot first, ask questions later, oh, whoops, it wasn't even your house on the warrant. Sorry, we shot you in bed at 3 o'clock in the morning after we kicked your door in. What I'm going to say, postulate, that we're going to see in the future is that these robot sentries, like the K-5, and the K-5 is not weaponized. K-5 looks like a little R2-D2 surveillance unit, and they're already using it in Silicon Valley and California to patrol parking lots and malls and things, but don't think that that's the only one. That's just the first of many to come. Eventually, we're going to have Atlas robots patrolling, okay? It's going to happen. Google owns them. They will commercialize those, and they will sell them to police departments. Mark my words, it will happen. And they're going to use the fact that it's costing. Think about this, because since cops don't have to have their own liability insurance, and every time they get sued by a family whose kid gets unlawfully killed, who has to pay the lawsuit when they lose? Oh, you and me with our tax dollars. So I am going to guess here that in the future, they're going to say, you know what? It's a hell of a lot cheaper for us to buy a bunch of these Atlas robots to patrol our neighborhoods. And maybe they'll even put cute little, like, transformer tools on them so they can walk, and then when they need to drive somewhere to answer a call, bzz, 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 and they get like Segway wheels on them, bzz, and they can zoom around. Bzz. Maybe they'll even be able to fly. Did you see the jetpack is finally ready for prime time? Goes on sale to the public in 2016. Yes, it does. And Pigman had a video on that yesterday. I was so excited. So we're going to have Atlas in the future. I mean, this shit, I'm going to have nightmares tonight about this. Segway feet when he needs them and jetpacks when he's got to make a quick aerial trip. But there's going to be an Atlas in your town someday. Or maybe a little Pokey K5 who'll become an Atlas someday. Because of the fact the cops can't keep their guns in their holsters and stop killing our kids. So the way that they put this, like, we need cops to be able to not shoot people. I think actually they're going to use that whole argument against us. That too many cops have been shooting too many people. And maybe they should robotize the police force. It's coming. I know it is. There's no way we're going to get around that. And you know what? It'll cut down on pensions. It'll cut down on benefits. They never go on vacation. Maybe it'll start as the midnight sentry that patrols from 3 a.m. until 8 a.m. But eventually, he's going to be like the sidekick in the police car. I don't know. All right. It's Friday. Number four. Another reason why killer robots should be banned. Number four, they would not comply with the rules of war. Huh. Didn't know that. Distinction, proportionality, and precaution are three pillars of international humanitarian law and the laws of war. Armed forces must distinguish between combatants and non-combatants. Civilian casualties and damage to civilian buildings must not be excessive in relation to the expected military gain, and all sides must take reasonable precautions to protect civilians. Now, what planet is Amnesty International on? I mean, are they in some little corner somewhere where they haven't quite opened the door or turned on the internet for about, oh, I don't know, 8, 10, 12 years? And when you take a look at what we are doing with drone bombing the Middle East and killing, oh, I don't know, 100 wedding guests because we thought there might have been one terrorist on the block somewhere. And this isn't just once. It's over and over and over and over and over again. And we're doing it with 18 or 20-year-old kids sitting in some sort of drone pilot office. I don't even remember where it was. Was it in Arizona or North Carolina? There were a couple of them. Utah, maybe. Directing these drones remote controlled from a different continent. So we're already breaking the rules of law, apparently. I wonder what kind of, and I know, I think it was Pakistan, actually, had filed something against us at the UN for drone bombing, saying that it was humanitarian, we were breaking humanitarian law. But I mean, we're doing it everywhere. So how is this being allowed? It says all of this. This making sure we don't kill civilians with drones, et cetera, in the military. All of this clearly requires human judgment, and robots just lack the ability to analyze the intentions of people or make complex decisions about the proportionality or the necessity of an attack. Not to mention the need for compassion and empathy for civilians caught up in a war. Now, the day they already got HD Argus cameras. We looked at that Argus where they could fly miles in the sky and film 24/7 in full 1080p. And it's probably even higher than that. Probably like 4K for miles in the sky. 20-mile perimeter. And they can zoom in and out and move forwards and backwards in time. How long before they connect up that facial recognition database that they have soon to be, like, including all your biometrics, and they'll probably have your voice patterns. You know they're working on that. You know, for any of the stuff I talked about yesterday with Google having the patents on being able to open up your microphone and advertise to you based upon the topics you're discussing in a room or on your phone or whatever in the future with the director of the National Institute of Mental Health moving over to Google Life Science, which, by the way, I found a story yesterday. That division that the Tom Insel went to, the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, where he said that he was going to start building apps. That was what he wanted to do, to diagnose mental disease remotely, smart with smart apps. That was the division that just got the new name, by the way, Verily. And it's going to do lots of other things, right? It's going to be the division that also is able to diagnose you like we can diagnose our car. But just be aware of that. But when we talked about Google being able to get your voice off of things and use it, you know, that is, again, a biometric imprint. You don't think of your voice as being a biometric, but it is. We all have our own resonances, and we all talk with our own sorts of inflections. And I mean,
I can do voices,
but it's very difficult for me to talk differently 24/7 from what I normally do. You know, so as they have these drones that they start adding these technologies to, so facial recognition, biometric recognition, you know, they also, I mentioned yesterday about being able to identify you from like your body movements and the way you move your mouse or the way you scratch your face or scratch your ass for that matter. You know, they got all these different statistics that they're collecting. The more and more they monitor, they can tell your emotions. You know, they have algorithms now. We were talking about the self-driving car a while ago where they were going to, they were talking about embedding the capabilities into the dashboard. So the camera is going to be able to determine just by your facial expressions and your heart rate and all your other physical data that they'll be collecting via biosensor, probably in the steering wheel. They'll be able to determine if you're going into a fit of road rage. So the car can say, now calm down there, Jewel. Or I'm going to have to take control of the car from you. You have 30 seconds to take deep breaths now. You know, so their argument, this Amnesty International argument is about, oh, well, they lack the ability to analyze the intentions of people. Well, I don't think that's going to be for so much longer. When they can start reading body language and they understand, you know, Google's also, that's one of the things Kurzweil was working on, was all the free language on the internet and being able to understand colloquialisms and slang and how people use words and the meaning of words based in the context of a paragraph. I mean, that'll be computers that'll be able to do that. Once they're able to crack all these little nuances and read body language and facial expressions and contexts of sentences with slang words, that will be completely untrue. Those are nuances that only human beings can pick up, and those are only human beings that are well adept at reading situations. You know, not everybody is key to those cues. There are some people that lack like empathy, that don't understand any of that stuff. It's just about them. And they don't give a shit about you, or anything you feel at all. All right, that was a big tangent. Let's swing back around. So, anyway, number five. Another reason to get serious about banning killer robots. There would be a huge accountability gap for their use if a robot did act unlawfully. How could it be brought to justice? Those involved in its programming, manufacturing, deployment, as well as superior officers and political leaders could be held accountable. However, it could be impossible for any of these actors to reasonably foresee how a killer robot would react in any given circumstance, potentially creating an accountability vacuum. And there have already been a couple cases of them having to find accountability in regards to a robot. There were two deaths now in factories. We briefly mentioned that. We read the stories when they happen of people getting killed by automation systems, being in the wrong place at the wrong time and getting crushed. And really, there's nobody that's held accountable for that. And there wasn't. They were actually thinking about a lawsuit at one point, but The guy was in a restricted area for the one. And the other one, they had gone into, oh, I wish I remembered what it was, chicken? Or it was some sort of food processing plant. But it was the big ovens. They had done some sort of cooking or oven cleaning, and somebody was in there repairing it. And that might be the one, actually, where there wasn't a proper chain of command, and that oven should have been shut down when someone was in there repairing it, and they didn't know he was inside. Talk about horrifying. And then, of course, the Google self-driving cars. There are a couple of them who've gotten tickets already. One had an accident. Actually, there have been a couple accidents. And one was driving too slow. I read. So who gets the ticket? You know, are you going to send it to Google? Probably not. Already, investigations into unlawful killings through drone strikes are rare. Yeah, they are. And accountability is even rarer. And in its report on the U.S. drone strikes in Pakistan, there you go, because that's the one I told you about where they were suing. Amnesty International exposes the secrecy surrounding the U.S. administration's use of drones to kill people and its refusal to explain the international legal basis for individual attacks, raising concerns that strikes in Pakistani tribal areas also may have violated human rights. Well, there you go. I mean, and the Pakistanis are arguing that now as well. Ensuring accountability for drone strikes has proven difficult enough, with an extra layer of distance in both the targeting and killing decisions that killer robots would involve. We are not only likely to see an increase in unlawful killings and injuries, but both on the battlefield and in policing operations. How many of these do we have? Jesus, this is taking forever. It's a whole show. I wasn't planning on doing this. This is just going to be the opener. And number eight. If killer robots are ever deployed, it would be near possible to stop them. Well, yeah, maybe. Especially if they use stuff like that morphing metal nano crap we talked about the other day, just like Terminator. It, trust me, too, this morphing liquid metal stuff, they're like all hot over because it can morph into different shapes and things. And there's just nightmares galore for me. It's been hard, actually. I have to like go into a coma to sleep because this stuff, this is not science fiction. That's just not. Number eight. Yeah, we said that if killer robots are ever deployed, it would be near impossible to stop them. And this is what I've been saying for the longest time. We better start getting our engineering minds together and figuring out different ways to take out different technologies, because there may be a day, hey, maybe it's not our government. Maybe it's rogues. Maybe it's quote-unquote terror cells that are attacking us with these tools. But it's going to happen someday. If they're out there, we're going to see them. And running in the forest isn't going to get you anywhere. So what's going to happen when you can't run or hide anymore? And even if you go underground, hey, they've been using drones for quite a number of years now from the sky, not only able to find archaeological stuff buried from a half million years ago from the drone pictures below, but they can also find secret bunkers. So you won't even be safe underground anymore. Says, as the increasing and unchecked use of drones has demonstrated, once weapon systems enter into use, it's incredibly difficult or near impossible to regulate or even curb their use. So, yeah, how are we going to stop Skynet once it is fully connected and operational? The drone papers recently published by The Intercept, if confirmed, I haven't read those, but there is a hyperlink here to those, paints an alarming picture of the lethal U.S. drone program. And according to the documents, during 1 5-month stretch, 90% of the people killed by U.S. drone strikes were unintended targets. Oh, 90%. Underscoring the U.S.'s administration's long-standing failure to bring transparency to the drone program. And it appears too late to abolish the use of weaponized drones, yet their use must be drastically restricted to save civilian lives. Killer robots would greatly amplify the risk of unlawful killings, and that is why such robots must be preemptively banned. Taking the wait-and-see approach could lead to further investment in the development and rapid proliferation of these systems. Right. For next year's weapon sales tech show in Dubai. Yeah, that's where they have them. They sell the killer drones at the tech shows in Dubai. Again, another great place. It's just unbelievable. Number nine, thousands of robotic experts, and they have called for killer robots to be banned. And it's not just me. In July 2015, some of the world's leading artificial intelligence researchers, scientists, and related professionals signed an open letter calling for an outright ban on killer robots. In July 2015... Oh, that's a big quote, and they did it again, so it's written twice. So far, the letter has only gained 2,587 signatures. That's crazy. Oh, I got hiccups. Including more than 14 current and past presidents of artificial intelligence and robotics organizations and professional associations. Notable signatories include Google's DeepMind chief executive, Demis Hassanabis. So that's interesting. Their DeepMind chief executive for AI signed it. That'll just make their stock go higher. Tesla CEO Elon Musk, Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak, Skype co-founder Jan Thielen, and Professor Stephen Hawking. And if thousands of scientific and legal experts are so concerned about the development and potential use of killer robots and agree with the campaign to stop killer robots that they need to be banned, what are governments waiting for? And that is a very good question. All right, number 10. Ever since number 10, there's been a lot of talk but little action in the last 2 years. Ever since the problems posed by killer robots were first brought to light in April 2013. And yeah, maybe in an international scale, but I've been talking about this shit since I first went on air. Kind of been one of my red buttons. The only substantial international discussions on this issue have been a 2-week-long informational expert meetings in Geneva at the UN Convention on Certain Conventional Weapons, CCW for short. It is ludicrous that so little time has been devoted to so serious a risk and so little progress has been made. Yeah, it's ludicrous, but don't think that it's not planned. They don't want it to stop. Money maker, war machine, all well invested, and it's not about keeping you and me safe. Says the world cannot wait any longer to take such action against such a serious global threat. And it is time to get serious about banning killer robots once and for all. Of course it is. And we're going to look a little more at this. We got about 7 minutes, so there's some time still. I guess we're going to skip. I got a couple implantable sensors and biosensors that I ran across, as well as a biologically powered chip, but we might save those for Monday. I want to get to the one that I mentioned right at the end of the show yesterday that we never got to that ties right in with this. It says, so where are we going to get when we start getting all these artificially intelligent gadgets, right? We read a story yesterday that said the cell phone is dead in 5 years. And why is it dead? Not because mobile communications will be dead, or because the Internet of Things will be dead. No, it'll be dead in 5 years because electronics and artificial intelligence are going to be integrated into everything we touch and do in our lives. They'll be integrated into devices, into clothing, into shoes, into walls, into us, implantables. They talked about that too. All these new, yeah, all in the name of 21st century healthcare. They're also going to be in our cars. I have a friend who's driving a company car. And that company car is a brand new one with all kinds of smart features. And apparently, it warns you if you're going over the speed limits. And it gives you a warning or two. And after that warning or two, it'll blow you into your employer or to the insurance company. Well, check this out. The smart car seems to have tattled on its driver. Uh-oh. All the more reason to be driving older cars. A Florida woman. When was this story from? December 7th, so a couple days ago. A Florida woman was reportedly arrested and placed into custody last week after her car implicated her in at least one alleged hit-and-run incident. Now, I am not implicating hit-and-runs as being anything that I would expect anyone to get away with. If I made that split-second decision to turn my wheel before hitting the brick wall and I hit people, I wouldn't be running. And if you fess up to something you did wrong, don't run away because they'll always catch you. But the fact that your car, your mobile, your new mobile computing device, and they said that, remember, car is going to be protected under DMCA, or they're arguing that it is because it has now been designated a mobile computing device. That mobile computing device tattletailed. How long will it be before your mobile phone with biosensors for detecting chemicals in the air, they already have those, or other illicit substances, doesn't have you slide your finger across that screen and it says, I taste THC. 911 for your local area. There seems to be some illicit activity going on at this address. I mean, that could be a potential future. It's already starting, people. According to reports from Chicago's ABC 7, and ABC 25 in West Palm Beach, Florida, a car driven by 57-year-old Kathy Bernstein automatically dialed 911 to report a crash. The call was part of a safety feature designed to help first responders. Of course, it's always to help you. Designed to help first responders locate people who may have lost consciousness during a crash. That seems to have given dispatchers all the information that they needed to pinpoint the location of the vehicle and to find the alleged hit-and-run driver without ever having to talk to a person. In fact, talking to a person did not help at all. In an audio clip of the 911 call obtained by the Florida radio or TV station, Bernstein denied to a skeptical dispatcher that there had ever been any accident at all. The report said that the car tattled on its owner and that car was a Ford. Look out. Police in Port St. Lucie, Florida, did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Alan Hall, a spokesman for Ford, said that the company hadn't heard of 911 assist ever being used like this before, but he said from reports he had heard about the Florida incident, it seems that the emergency call feature, quote, worked exactly like it was supposed to, unquote. Whoa. The vehicle was in a collision, and it called 911 through the driver's phone, which was paired to the car, right? A lot of newer vehicles have that, where when you get into the car, you pair your cell phone via Bluetooth. Beep. Now you could do all of your hands-free calling through the speaker system of the car. You could stream your Pandora on your phone while you're driving and be all kinds of hands-free. Yeah, but who knew when it detected a crash, it could also call 911 on your behalf and blow you in. And I mean, think of all the other things that it could blow you in for. It's very frightening, people. Says the vehicle was in a collision. It called 911 through the driver's phone, which was paired with the car. When the driver did not respond to the operator, the car appears to have taken over and provided the operator with all the information needed to locate the vehicle. That could have been a lifesaver if that driver was unresponsive after passing out behind the wheel. Hall, who's a spokesman for Ford, said that at least 10 million Ford vehicles with 911 assist capability are on the road right now. However, drivers should note that the feature is an opt-in for now, meaning that all drivers, including the one allegedly involved in this crash, have to turn the feature on and pair their car with their phones before it will work. Well, that's interesting. At least you have to turn it on, but I bet in the future you won't, not for insurance purposes. They'll probably give you a big fat discount after they raise car insurance, 100%, and then say, hey, if you don't use these black boxes and this 911 assist, you're going to have to pay these new rates. Otherwise, we'll give you your old rate back. You just got to let us spy on you, make sure you're not speeding or doing anything else that you shouldn't be doing. This kind of emergency call technology is also on track to be in every car in the European Union starting in 2018. But concerns of cyber attacks, and we saw that with the DARPA Dan story in 60 Minutes, was very easy to cyber attack a car and all the car systems. And a lot of the car manufacturers haven't done anything about it, mind you. There was a big report that was submitted to Congress about that, and it's a very serious issue. Concerns over cyber attacks that could divulge your location information or even take over your car have gotten a lot of attention on the Hill as lawmakers and regulators raise concern over the security implications of putting more smart technology into our vehicles. But there are other things as well. Whether you think it's a good thing or not, it is becoming increasingly difficult to hide your location, even when you're trying to get away. All right, people, everyone have an awesome Friday. Make sure you stick around, and I will catch you.